for argument is Congal versus Barnard. Ms. Goldblum?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Tina Congal. Your honors, in this case, there are multiple reasons, multiple errors, why this case should be remanded. To begin with, when the appeals counsel remanded this case initially, they stated that the testimony of the medical expert, Dr. Arden, was unclear. Yet, at the remand hearing, the administrative law judge didn't ask Dr. Arden to come back and testify so that her testimony could be clarified. He didn't call another medical expert to testify. He didn't, as the appeals counsel suggested, send her for psychological CEs. And yet, despite the fact that there's no way under that circumstances that he could have clarified her testimony, he still purported to rely on her testimony. In addition, the administrative law judge said he was relying on a report by Dr. Tomasetti. Dr. Tomasetti never examined Ms. Congal. He was a reviewer from the state agency. But what's very problematic about Dr. Tomasetti's report is that it was completed on July 10th, 1999. So he never considered any evidence after July 10th, 1999, including all of the evidence that showed that this woman didn't abuse alcohol or drugs since March of 2000. Furthermore, the judge concluded that the jobs that she had performed after January of 1999 were substantial gainful activity, but he didn't follow Social Security's guidelines in terms of how he came to that conclusion. He just looked at the amount of earnings for each year and said, well, that's got to be substantial gainful activity. And the only lip service that he paid to the concept of things such as unsuccessful work attempts were that he threw in the concept that, well, she had so much alcohol and drug involvement that that takes her out of the realm of being able to have unsuccessful work attempts. But what's also problematic about that is he doesn't acknowledge the fact that she wasn't involved in drug abuse or alcohol abuse after March of 2000. That's another problem with his decision. One of the pervasive problems of this case is that the administrative law judge evidenced a pervasive misunderstanding of bipolar disorders. You know, just as many of our ALJs in the past had shown a pervasive misunderstanding of fibromyalgia, as the Sarchet case showed, in this case, the judge's misunderstanding of bipolar disorder totally taints his review of the entire case. In the bipolar disorder, which all of the treating and examining physicians state is the cause of her problems, that when she's manic, she feels that she's high. She has lots of energy. She doesn't sleep. She says she feels like she can do anything. And like a lot of bipolar individuals, when she's having the manic states, that's when she also tends to abuse cocaine because, as she explained, like a child with Ritalin, it kind of helps calm her down. And then she has the depressive episodes in which she sleeps all the time. She doesn't want to get out of bed. She can't motivate herself. And during those episodes, she's been suicidal and has tried to actually kill herself with drugs and alcohol. The judge has never reconciled that. The ALJ in this case discounted every treating or examining physician, many for the spurious reason that their findings, their reports were generated for her disability application. Well, our response to that is, well, so they were generated in response to her disability application. That's not any reason to discount them, particularly Dr. Gelman. Dr. Gelman didn't just have an interview with her. Dr. Gelman administered psychodiagnostic tests. He interviewed her husband. He interviewed her therapist, and at that point she had been sober for a while. And Dr. Nelson, who examined this individual at the behest of the Social Security Administration, examined her when she'd been sober for 4 months, and he reported that her overall prognosis psychiatrically is quite guarded. Now, the administrative law judge tries to use Dr. Nelson's report as somehow supporting his finding, but he ignores the parts that support her application, which is impermissible. The ALJ is not allowed to pick and choose from the reports. He has to acknowledge all of the evidence, including that detracts from his final findings. The ALJ's credibility determination is tainted by his confused assessment of the issues of drug and alcohol abuse with failure to follow prescribed treatment. Particularly, if an ALJ wants to find failure to follow prescribed treatment, he has to find, A, that the treatment that was prescribed would actually restore her to health to be able to work. Well, in this case, she's on multiple medications. She has to stop taking some of them for side effects. Some of them she can't take because she doesn't have insurance and she's dependent on sample packs that they run out of. And other times she testified that when I'm taking the antidepressants, that kicks me over into a manic state, so sometimes I stop taking the antidepressant to try to not get manic, because when she's manic, then things really get out of control. The ALJ never considered that. He also never followed Social Security's actual guidelines in terms of how to determine if DANA is material. The guidelines say, before you do anything else, you have to determine if this individual is disabled, and then you look and see if DANA is material. He never did that. He impermissibly tainted everything from the very beginning with alcohol, with the aberrant conclusion that, well, if she just stopped drinking and stayed on her meds, she'd be okay. But that doesn't make sense, because when she was sober, which she had been from March of 2000, she still wasn't able to keep her jobs. And that's the big thing. All of the evidence in the case indicates that this is a woman who, between the time she was diagnosed in the early 90s and 1998, had 38 jobs. During the period of time where the judge said she was obviously able to perform substantial gainful activity, there was at least 10 jobs. That doesn't show a stable individual. It shows an individual, like the vocational expert at the second hearing said, who's unreliable. And unreliable people can't keep jobs. They can't sustain substantial gainful activity. If there are no questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Goldblum. Mr. Lee?
Good morning. My name is John Lee. I'm here on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. The first point I want to clarify is that in Ms. Kangel's brief, a good deal of her argument is devoted to this claim that the drug and alcohol use and the bipolar disorder are so inextricably entwined that the ALJ really couldn't separate them out. And in that instance, this case, when he couldn't decide which it was, should have been resolved in her favor because there was a doubt. Contrary to that claim, as Ms. Goldblum has acknowledged, Ms. Kangel testified that she stopped using drugs and alcohol in March of 2000, and she did not use drugs and alcohol through the date of the administrative decision. In that context, there was a very clear picture of how Ms. Kangel functioned when she was not using drug and alcohol, and her argument on that point fails. The second argument...
So that period, March 2000 to when?
Through the date of the administrative hearing.
What's that? What date is that?
That was February of 2003.
Okay, what was her work performance during that period?
Her work performance during that period consisted of, in July of 2000, which was a point when she started seeing Dr. Tsai and was no longer using drugs and alcohol and was receiving treatment, she began working as a telemarketer. She did that job for 2 months, and then she left that job not because of her impairment, which could be a reason. It would be an unsuccessful work attempt, as Ms. Kankel has argued. She didn't leave for that reason. She left because she wanted to make more money. She immediately started working as a cashier. And she had that job from October 2001 through June 2001. That was an 8-month
period.
Wait, it
can't be October 2001.
I'm sorry, October 2000 through June of 2001. That's an 8-month period, which Ms. Cangell in their brief attempted to characterize as an unsuccessful work attempt. However, under the regulations, an unsuccessful work attempt, it can't be an unsuccessful work attempt if it's over than 6 months. So we've got more than 6 months. So we're 2 months over that for that job. After that job, she then started to work as a waitress. And then she, around September of 2002,
How long was she a waitress?
She was a waitress for about 5 months at the Time and Honey. And then she left that job after she was apparently having some difficulties with her boss, who was alcoholic, and she also said that she was finding the job to be overwhelming. At that time, though, when she left that job, although she was drug and alcohol free, she apparently was no longer seeing Dr. Tsai on a regular basis and did not appear to be taking medication. Then after that, she started working at a restaurant called Jetty's. She worked there, and then at
for how long?
Jetty's was from March of 2002 through September of 2002. There was a 2-month break after that.
Well, how long is that?
I guess that's 6 months. And I'm not sure what the earnings were for that period. So we, in our brief, we did not make the claim that that was substantial.
And what was she working at?
That was a waitress job.
Also. And then after that, her next job?
After that, she was working at a pancake house. That job started in November of 2002, and she was currently doing that at the time of the administrative hearing. And her testimony...
So how long is that?
That's another 3 months, between 2 and 3 months approximately. And we don't have evidence that she quit working on that job after the time of the administrative hearing.
Well, the problem with your argument is that the administrative law judge didn't go through that in this way. He doesn't seem to have any understanding of this manic depressive ailment.
Well, I think that the argument that's being made is a very general.
He relied very heavily on the drugs and alcohol, and just says she improved after she got off them, which of course is true. Obviously she'd have to improve. The question is whether she improves to the point where she could actually hold down a job, given she seems to have a serious mental disease, doesn't she?
Well, what
do you think she has?
The ALJ found that she had bipolar disorder. That's not in dispute.
Well, that's a serious disease.
It's a serious disease.
Right. So
the question here is whether or not she can sustain and do the kind of work that the ALJ found she could do. Here there was very strong evidence that she could. And, in fact, there was nearly a year period when she was actually performing work at the substantial gainful level of activity. And, in fact, she was performing full...
How long?
That was the two jobs. It was the telemarketer job and the cashier job.
For how long?
That lasted from July of 2000 through June of 2001.
So that's
over a year.
Pardon me?
That's almost a year.
You've got two jobs there, don't you?
Yes, there are two jobs, but as I pointed out, the telemarketer job...
What was the job that lasted 8 months?
The job that lasted 8 months was the cashier job, which she began immediately after the telemarketer job, and that job she left in order to make more money. And so our point about that is she did not leave that job because of her impairment. In addition to this work activity, which I think is very strong evidence of that she can function when not using drugs and alcohol and when using her medication, we do also have significant
but
medical evidence.
But these people, one of the characteristics of these people is they're not capable of taking regular medication.
Well,
that's
the
particular problem with manic depressives, because when they're in their manic state, they enjoy it. They don't want to take these drugs that'll bring them down. Isn't that a problem?
I think that what is being described is a symptom that can can result from the bipolar disorder. And there are probably many individuals who are currently on the rolls right now that are disabled because their bipolar disorder has symptoms like that that make it impossible for them to work. The question here is whether that's true for her. And the medical evidence in this case doesn't support that.
But you're ducking the point when you say, yes, if these people take their medication all the time, most of them are capable of working. But part of the illness is that they don't take the medication.
Well, we have over a year period here where Ms. Cangill was being treated by Dr. Tsai, and she did take her medication throughout that period.
And
that's
later
a pretty
she
long
didn't,
time.
Right? And that's very common with these people.
Well, the medical evidence doesn't show that she stopped taking her medication because of her impairment, and I think that's the kind of medical evidence the ALJ would be looking for to support
he didn't
that argument.
That.
Well, that argument wasn't what was being made. The argument at the administrative hearing was that the medications were not effective. And the ALJ, I think, very, very pointedly addressed that argument and noted this long time that she was taking her medications and was, in fact, performing a substantial gainful activity. I mean, I think the argument that's being made in the reply brief is not consistent with the argument that has been previously made. And in addition to that, when you look at the administrative record, there simply are no doctors who are supporting that characterization of her bipolar disorder. The argument is made, in a very general term, but I think no specific, but it's not being tied to the medical facts of this case. I think there were two. In sum, I think there were two strong lines of evidence that support the ALJ's decision in this case. First of all, we have the time that she was working, pretty much from July of 2000 through the date of the administrative hearing with a couple of breaks, and a good portion of that, close to a year, was even at the substantial gainful activity level. The second line of evidence is we have medical opinions, and I think particularly helpful are the treating notes from Dr. Tsai, who repeatedly described Ms. Cangill as doing well, describing her medications as effective. I see that I'm out of time. I ask that we be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Ms. Goldblum, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Ms. Goldblum, perhaps you could reply to your colleague's suggestion to us a moment ago that you really didn't develop before the ALJ the issue of whether or not her psychiatric condition was responsible for some of her medical noncompliance.
Your Honor.
His argument, I gather, is that this simply, while may be a generalized point with respect to bipolar disorder, never really was developed in this case.
Well, to begin with, Your Honor, Ms. Cangill testified that she would take the medication, particularly the antidepressants, and she would start feeling herself getting manic-y, and she would stop taking the medication. She also testified that when she was manic-y, although she didn't specifically state it in terms of medication, she stated, I couldn't be trusted. I didn't know what I was going to do. I'd get in the car and I'd just drive away and I'd be 12 hours away and not even really knew that I was going to do that. That's consistent with all of that type of manic-y behavior in addition to when someone gets in their car like that and drives 12 hours, she's not making sure she's grabbing her medication to begin with. But I also want to go back and address what my colleague brought up in terms of all these periods of work, because I think there's something a little that's not quite accurate about it. She had all these jobs, but as I noted before, there was at least 10 of them. And in fact, although he says that they're at one point close to a year and 8 months, when you look at the actual earnings, it doesn't really seem to bear that out. For instance, he talks about she had this job as a telemarketer where she made about she actually made only about $2,500. That ends, and perhaps, she said she wanted to get a better job, and that's admirable. She wanted to try. So she gets a job as a cashier, and the earnings in 2000 for the cashier job are less than $2,500.
In the whole year?
Yeah, in all of 2000.
The eight months?
I don't believe there was 8 months there, because in 2001, there wasn't any earnings from that particular job. And just very quickly, in 2001, the grossest earnings she had was from the job at John Deb Corp, which is, I believe, is a waitress. And she was there for only about 5 months. She testified that she started there about July. She was first there full-time, but that became too overwhelming. So by October or November, she went down. She only started taking a few days a week, and then they fired her by December. So although she made $7,300 there, that was the longest job she had during this period of time.
She made $7,300 in 5 months?
About 5 months, yeah. She was there from about January.
Well, that's pretty minute.
But again, what the judge did, again, is he took all of these jobs for all the different years, added them up and said, hey, that's SGA, but he didn't do any of the analysis that's required, and particularly when he also blew his analysis in terms of the aspects of DANA and his pervasive misunderstanding of bipolar disorder, this is a decision that cannot be affirmed, and we would ask that Your Honors remand this case.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case.